Well, the disruptive influence of Donald Trump's presidency played out again in a very profound way at the NATO summit in Brussels this week. The alliance members emerged, I think you'd have to say, somewhat battle-scarred after Trump accused them of not paying their way. In fact, he even accused Germany of being, and this is coming from Trump, too influenced by Russia. So having done so much to rattle this international order, whether it's on defence or security or trade or climate, there are now serious concerns that this repeated disruption is doing, you know, really enduring damage to bodies like NATO and the World Trade Organization. And could they really even break apart? And then you've got America's withdrawal from the Iran nuclear deal, another case. And that's leaving the countries that remain in the deal to work out whether they too might be caught by new US sanctions. Well, it's an extraordinary situation, and to discuss it, I'm delighted to be joined by scholar and economist Dr. Oliver Hartwich. Oliver is a German scholar, but comes to us by way first of Sydney and now New Zealand, where Oliver is the head of the New Zealand Initiative. Welcome back to Saturday Extra, Oliver.
Great to talk to you, Andrew.
Yeah, very good to chat to you again. It was an extraordinary week and an extraordinary summit in Brussels. Trump claims to have prevailed by getting the NATO countries to stump up more money. But it seems that even they've drawn some different conclusions. Are they right there to draw different conclusions to Donald Trump?
Well, I think it is a bit too early to tell because, yes, they managed to somehow conclude this NATO summit. But at the end of it, everybody left feeling a little bit confused because the US president still claims that he has received some assurances that especially Western European countries would increase the defense spending. But I'm not sure whether the Europeans would agree that that's what they had agreed to. So there is still a bit of confusion as to the as about the results of that summit. And only time will tell how NATO will continue to develop.
The figure that they all put on it is 2% of gross domestic product. Didn't he get his way in the sense that they all said, or that, you know, they've all claimed, yes, we'll put in 2%?
Well, in fact, that agreement dates back to a NATO summit 3 or 4 years ago when NATO leaders came together in Wales and committed back then to increase the defence spending to 2%. So in a way, this is nothing new. Except when you look at where European countries stand with, on defense spending, Germany currently spends about 1.2% of GDP on defense. They are far way off. So Trump, in a way, is right, pointing it out to the Europeans. Hey, this is not what you have agreed. You're free riding on us. You're free riding on American defense spending. Except the way he's going about it, by accusing them openly in an open forum, is not likely to actually bridge that gap and make the Europeans come back to it.
You've been a very thoughtful critic of Trump from the centre-right, but you mentioned there that you do think that he has a point when he criticises Germany. What is the state of Germany's conflict readiness?
Well, I would say it's pitiful, really, because Germany is in no way ready to defend itself against any kind of attacks. Look at the figures. Germany, for example, has 325 so-called Leopard 2 tanks, but only 179 of them are available, and even fewer, 90, are combat ready. Germany has a fleet of 6 submarines. None of them is ready to leave the harbor at the moment because they're all under repair. There are days when Germany doesn't have any functioning transport airplanes for its air force. And actually, to make matters worse, the German helicopter fleet in the German Air Force is not ready either. They, in fact, don't have enough helicopters to keep all pilots flying enough so they can keep their licenses. So believe it or not, German Air Force helicopter pilots are now flying for the German AA just to keep enough flying hours.
Right. But they've got a pretty big standing army, though, for Europe, don't they? Close to 200,000.
That is right. They do have a relatively big standing army, and yet, again, only a few thousand of these soldiers are ready to be deployed at short notice because they simply don't have enough materials. So there are some estimates saying that maybe only about 30% of Germany's combat forces are actually ready at any one moment. So Trump certainly has a point. Germany should be doing more on defense, and Germany hasn't actually done enough for the past 25 years. So after the end of the Cold War, Germany thought it would reach some sort of peace dividend, so they wouldn't have to spend as much anymore. And I think that's coming back to bite them now.
Look, if Trump had a point, you say, about German defense spending, did he have a point when he said that Angela Merkel, you guys are too close, almost under the thumb of Russia?
Well, Angela Merkel could have, of course, said that's the pot calling the kettle black, because it's a good question who is more under the thumb of Russia, whether it's Merkel or Putin. I think he just wanted to provoke her because he knows exactly her own personal history coming from East Germany, and he knows about her difficult relationship with Vladimir Putin. In fact, there is not much truth to his claim. If you look at Germany's energy dependence on Russia, yes, Germany currently imports about 40% of its natural gas from Russia. That sounds a lot until you realize that even when the Soviet Union was still around, that share was about 50% of natural gas imported from Russia. And then you also have to take into account that, of course, natural gas is not the only energy source that Germany uses. Roughly a quarter of Germany's primary energy needs are covered by natural gas. So the total of Russian gas deliveries to Germany account for about 10% of Germany's energy needs. So I think you couldn't really make the claim that Germany was overly dependent on Russia. I think it's actually the other way around. The Russians are very dependent on Germany because they need the euros from Germany. They need the receipts from their energy exports to keep Russia going, because the Russian economy is actually in crisis.
Oliver, I get that Angela Merkel is aggrieved at the insinuation she's under the thumb of Vladimir Putin, but I think her predecessor, Gerhard Schroeder, was very close to Putin and ultimately ended up on the board of a Russian government-controlled company.
That is exactly right. And he wasn't just close to Putin, he is still very close to Putin. When Putin was sworn in for his latest term, there were only three people after the swearing-in ceremony shaking Putin's hand, and one of them was Gerhard Schröder.
Yeah.
So Gerhard Schröder is very close to Putin. I think he's also in the pocket of Putin, if you like, and he probably doesn't even realize it.
Yeah. Amidst all this sound and fury, though, it is important to hear someone like yourself assess, what damage do you think is seriously being done or potentially done to the alliance because of this disruption?
Well, there is an enormous amount of damage done to the institutions that have made up the West for the past 50, 60, 70 years. Not just to NATO, of course. I mean, the very fact that we're discussing whether NATO might fall apart would have been unthinkable 2 years ago. It's other institutions as well. It's the G7, or what used to be the G8, that has been left practically powerless after Trump pulled out of the G7 agreement in Canada a couple of weeks ago. So there's not much left of that. Trump finds it much easier dealing with people like Kim Jong-un of North Korea rather than dealing with Theresa May or Angela Merkel. And I think that in itself is a worry. Then there is, of course, Trump's attack on the United Nations, on the World Trade Organization. I mean, by just blocking judges to sit on trade tribunals, he is leaving the WTO in a very difficult position, because they wouldn't be able to do their jobs anymore if they didn't have any judges on these trade tribunals. So Trump is almost systematically undermining every single of those institutions that made up the West.
The other area where there's potential for huge disruption comes with Iran. We've had this situation where the American ambassador to Germany has basically called on Germany to stop some of the big banks sending, and I think it's going to be in cash, something like $350 million of cash funds back to Tehran, because the Iranians are worried that fresh US sanctions will be imposed and stop their ability to access cash. I mean, what do we make of this call? Is it realistic to say to the banks, you can't release this Iranian cash?
Well, it was an extraordinary story that we heard about in the last few days about that Iranian cash. So Iran, fearing the new sanctions, of course, wants to withdraw 300 and something million euros in cash from Germany. They want to put the money into suitcases and take it straight to Tehran. Now, the U.S. ambassador, as you mentioned, has protested against that because they say it is in violation of the newly, not agreed, but imposed sanctions, unilaterally imposed sanctions from America. So they want to stop that transfer of money. So the ambassador has complained about that. Whether there is a case actually depends on whether you think that this money would be used to finance terrorism in Iran, or whether it might just be money used for example, to help Iranian travelers who no longer have access to credit card network like Visa or MasterCard when they leave the country. But actually, speaking about that, U.S. ambassador, he doesn't really fulfill his function as a diplomat properly because he is extremely outspoken by diplomatic standards. He's not only telling the Germans what kind of money they can transfer or not, he's also made it clear that he wants to support specific parties in Germany and in Europe. Again, not usually something that diplomats do.
And he's also verboten, if I might say so.
Yes, even in Germany. He's also called in the CEOs of Germany's largest car manufacturers to offer them a special deal. And the deal would be, well, you lower your car tariffs, and so do we, and in the end we can export to each other's countries without any tariffs. Sounds good, until you realize that Germany doesn't have a trade policy anymore, because German trade policy is made in Brussels. Yeah. Germany is a member of the European Union, and the European Union has a joint trade policy. So for the U.S. ambassador to call in a few CEOs of some German car manufacturers and offer them a special deal is simply in violation of the rules. It's going behind the European Union, it's circumventing them, and it's actually a diplomatic affront. You can't do that.
And Trump is rejoicing at the sort of salami slicing way in which the European Union is disintegrating. Look, just finally, after he goes to the UK this weekend, Donald Trump is meeting Vladimir Putin again. I think that's going to be in Helsinki in Finland. Do we know, or what could we expect might transpire there?
We don't really know. We can speculate that if Trump really wants to continue on his mission of weakening every single Western institution, he might just acknowledge that Russian invasion in Crimea was fine, and he would no longer insist on Russia pulling the troops out. That would be the nightmare, of course, having first had a disastrous NATO summit, then only to meet with Putin and actually completely go against anything that NATO had previously agreed. It is still possible. With Trump, you never quite know.
Always great to talk to you, because you always shed, you know, really illuminating light, to pardon the redundancy, on these issues. Thanks for joining us on Saturday Extra, Oliver.
Thank you, Andrew.
And Oliver Hartwich is the Executive Director of the New Zealand Initiative. He was formerly with the Centre for Independent Studies here in Australia, but Oliver is also a long-term scholar of European and German geopolitics.